I've seen Nathan MacKinnon. I've seen Ryan Nugent Hopkins. Our next guest seen both of them up front, as have I. There is no chance that they weigh the same. I don't care. I don't care what any NHL.com site says. Nathan McKinnon's a thicker guy than Nugent Hopkins. Ray Ferraro joins us now. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing great. There is no comparison physically between the two.
No, he's just a bigger, thicker, more mature young man. That's all.
And, you know, here, there is a similarity between Eric Johnson and Ryan Nugent Hopkins, though. And neither of them should have been in the NHL when they were 18. And the reason I say that is because you open up the possibility of injury so greatly to young men that are playing against men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eric Johnson's much bigger and much stronger, and, of course, he got hurt in a golf cart. But he wasn't ready to play. His first couple of years were a disaster. And so St. Louis gets rid of him, and now at, what's Eric Johnson now, 24 maybe?
Well, he was 06, so no, he's about 26 actually, just over 25 turning, yeah.
Just coming into his, he's short still of his prime.
Yeah, I agree.
And so you get these kids in, and when they don't pan out early to the expectation that you might have for a number one pick, the trigger finger gets itchy, and really, Ryan Nugent Hopkins should probably be entering his second year right now, at the most. I mean, he would be physically stronger. He wouldn't have gone through all this shoulder nonsense, likely. You know, where he didn't have surgery, then he had surgery, and then he had the rehab, and he didn't get... When you're rehabbing, you're not really getting stronger. You're just trying to get back to where you were.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, but, to, like, Nathan MacKinnon is... Like, I was told today by somebody that would, you know, like somebody in the ABS organization, the guy's a freak. Like freak being great. You know, he's just a freak. They talk about his first three strides, like, you know, they're like, who does he remind you of? Like, he's that player. Nobody's saying, who does every other player remind you of? We're talking about MacKinnon, and they're like, who does he remind you of? For me, if you're my age, I'm reminded of Mike Gartner when he skates. Like, remember when Mike Gartner would take off? It was like he was in an airplane.
Yeah.
He's like, how does he get that fast so quickly? Now, Gartner had other issues. I mean, certainly he could score. He scored 700 goals. But, you know, he was never known as a big game player, and that's just the knock that he carried. But skating-wise, MacKinnon's got this balance to him that makes him hard to knock over. As Patrick Waugh calls it, his 1-2-3 strides are faster than anybody's, and he's 18.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a kid. And so I'm amazed that Colorado has done what they've done. I really am. I look at their defense. They've got four guys they picked up as free agents, a third-round draft choice in Tyson Barrie and Eric Johnson. And that's their defense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all kind of come together, and then they've had a great eraser in goal. Barlamov has had just a fabulous year for them. And, you know, who knows, maybe next year they take a step back. But look at the players that they're surrounding MacKinnon with. I mean, he's a natural centerman. He's playing on the wing. And the reason he's playing on the wing is because the wing is easier.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's less responsibilities, and that's you know, the smart way to do it a long time. And that leads me into a great question for you, Ray. I had Dave Tippett on the show on Thursday, and he talked about the three T's as a coach. You teaching, transferring, then you terminate. You teach them, you hope they get a position. If they don't, then you transfer them somewhere else. If that doesn't work, well, then you terminate them. And, you know, it brings me to...
That'd be so bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah. And it brings me to Sam Gagne. I look at Gagne, his most productive stretch ever of his career was when he played the wing with Cogliano and Nilsson. I know he was a rookie at the end of that year, and he scored 28 points in his last 28 games. He hasn't come close since playing center. He cannot find a way to become a better faceoff guy. It's 7 years in the league now. Do you think it's time to try him on the wing?
Yes, but with who?
Good question.
You know, I mean, there's the thing. So you move him to the wing, and now we're short another centerman, right? You got to go get somebody, and you can't expect, like, if it comes to the draft and the draft plays out however it does. I mean, Ekblad's going to be gone, so maybe it's Draisaitl.
Yep.
And so I happen to think, unlike a lot of people that knock his skating, I think his skating will be fine because, you know, we talked about MacKinnon seeing him up close. I've seen Draisaitl up close.
Yeah.
And
big.
His legs aren't developed yet, but he's a big kid. And I know his general manager in Prince Albert really well. And his name's Bruno Campesi is his name. And Bruno speaks only glowingly about the work ethic of this kid. He's going to be heavy. Like, he's going to be a big kid. But if you move him to the middle next year, like, say you draft him, and then you have Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl, that's great for 4 years from now,
mm-hmm.
or 3 years from now. But, my God, could you imagine him, like some 18-year-old kid, and he's trying to play a second-line role? God, you're asking a lot. Like, eventually you've got to get a veteran there that allows these kids to grow, that you can play them in a matchup that they've got a better chance to succeed in. Because if they're always just hanging on by their fingernails,
mm-hmm.
what do you think that does to their confidence? Pretty soon they're like, they can read. They look at their stats. Man, I'm minus 21. I've never been that before. I must suck. Well, they don't. They're just young. But that's what you think as a player. You're like, man, I'm brutal. Look at me. Look at my stats. I got 6 goals. It's a hard league. And that, I think, has got to be, in my opinion, the goal for the Oilers is that even though people now are wanting to, I mean, they're sick and tired of this rebuild, but you need some quality veterans. This has to be, in my opinion, this has to be their number one priority. Get some quality veterans that can play significant minutes for you, not guys that are really depth players. Find a way, whether you've got to trade a draft pick or trade a couple of these young forwards, but find veterans that can bridge you until these young guys are really old enough to carry the mantle. Because you're asking too much from them, in my opinion.
Ray Frauer joins us. Wholeheartedly agree, Ray. And even if you draft Draisaitl, you mentioned, you know, moving him to the wing for 30 games here or there isn't a bad thing either, because there's less responsibility.
Hey, what's wrong with that? Waugh told me today about MacKinnon. They started him on left wing.
Yeah.
And then they moved him to right wing. And all the while, he wanted to play center. And Patrick said, I knew that, and I kept holding him back. And he said, because the more I held him back, the more he wanted it, and the more he wanted to prove me wrong, and the more he grew, and then we could put him in the middle. He said, but right now, we need him on the wing. So that's where he's going to play. But so they moved him to the wing to ease the transition from junior to pro. And I would say they've had spectacular results.
Definitely can help by slowing guys and making them learn an easier position. And then once you have confidence, Ray, it's amazing. And you played the game. It's amazing how much more you can do when you believe you can do it.
And how much less you can't do when you don't.
Yeah.
Like I'm telling you, Jason, there are times I scored in my second NHL game. I didn't score for 24 more games. I was so lucky that the Hartford Whalers were terrible because they had nobody else. And so I kept playing. And there was a stretch there, and I remember it thinking, I cannot play in this league. I'm not good enough because I can't even get near the net. Never mind scoring. I can't even get a chance. And then I scored. I know the goal. It was against Frank Caprice from Vancouver. It was a Sunday afternoon game in Hartford. That was on Sunday. I got my second goal. On Tuesday, I got a hat trick. On Saturday, I got another hat trick. But if I didn't have those 25 games where I didn't do anything to stay in the league, how would I have ever grown? And I thought I was never going to score again. And it's a brutal feeling, man. I was 20. I'm like, man, I'm never going to score. I'm never going to play. And I'm sure that's what these young kids still think. How could you not?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I know there's some second guessing. You know, obviously, Taylor Hall, I'm sure to point a game, he's pretty confident about his game. But, yeah, there's a lot of the other guys. And, you know, Anton Lanner is a prime example to me. I look at Anton Lanner, I felt the first few years of his development were completely screwed up by the organization. He was playing 9-10 minutes a night in the NHL, where he could have been playing in the American League. This year's the first year he's down there pretty much the entire year. He's a point-a-game player. He's their captain. He's doing everything. He has a lot of confidence. He comes up here and they move him on the wing. And some guys can play the wing easier. Some guys, they struggle. And he, you know, he struggled playing on the wing, didn't score. And now everybody wants to write him off. And I'm thinking, wait a second. This organization has little depth. Anton Lander's a guy that I want to work with because I see a guy who's determined to try to get better. He competes
hard. And this is the dangerous time because if you cut loose, like if you've got, you know, and really the reason players, a lot of them get cut loose is because they don't have enough contracts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you cut a player like Anton Lander loose, somebody else gets the benefit of your 3 years of development. And they're going to sign him to a two-way contract for 2 years. And in those 2 years, he's going to have his real chance to make the NHL. And so the Oilers are going to be in the decision department with him. Do you sign him to a two-year deal? Because he's not going to sign a one-year deal. You know, I mean, the European players as well, they've got the option of going home if they want to. And then they can come back when they're older. But are you going to cut loose a guy that seems to be kind of right there? That's a classic example of a guy that just did not need to be in the NHL. The only thing that got better was his pocketbook because he didn't.
No. Exactly. And I Lander's a guy in the organization. I have no problem giving him some more time. You know, I looked at a guy like Nyquist, and people can talk about salary cap and everything else. He spent 22 games to start this season in the American League. It did not hurt him whatsoever, and he came up. And I'm not saying this guy's Nyquist because he's unbelievable, but my point is there's an organization that's constantly patient, and it's working out. This organization, go sign some middle-of-the-road guys to be your third-line center for 20 games. I don't have an issue with that.
When Los Angeles, under Dean Lombardi, was just starting to acquire a bunch of young assets, they went out one summer and they signed four veterans, and it was Michael Hanzus, and I mean you could look it up. It's because it's really a very parallel point in time for where the Oilers are right now. But it was the summer they signed Hanzus and they signed a couple defensemen. There was four of them, and they. You know, I mean, Hanzus has been past his best on date for 5 years now, and he was coming off knee surgery. But he went there, and he helped stabilize their team until their young guys were ready. They didn't ask their young guys to carry the mail for them. And then when they came up, like the guys in Detroit, they're ready to play. And some are more ready than others, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. But you can be... Like, if people think Anthony Mantha, who's, you know, scored 1,000 goals this year in Val-d'Or, if they think he's going to make the Red Wings next year, they haven't been following the last 23 years. He could go find an apartment right now in Grand Rapids because that's where he's going. And that's the way they do it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And it does not matter. And there are several reasons for it. One is development, for sure. They want the player to mature. And to understand the pro game a little bit. Number two, it's financial. Look what the Oilers have done to these players out of their first contract, $6 million for Eberle, $6 million for Hall, $6 million for Nugent Hopkins. What do you think Justin Schultz is going to get? And the Detroit Red Wings, Justin Advocator won a Stanley Cup and then signed a one-year deal for $700,000. Because he had no games.
Yeah.
Darren Helm, I think he makes $2 million. Is Ryan Nugent Hopkins $4 million better than Darren Helm right now? Not a chance. Not a chance. But by keeping the players in the minors, you take away all their or any possible ladder they might have financially. That's just the way they do it. You might not agree with the Red Wing system, and people might not, but that's fine. I happen to think it's really hard to win. But apparently it's really hard to make the playoffs because only two teams have a 10-year streak going.
Yep.
Detroit at 23 and San Jose at 10. Nobody else.
And Ray, speaking of the San Jose Sharks, Ray Farrar from TSN joins us. I picked them to win, and I was kind of jokingly saying I loathe myself for picking them to win the Stanley Cup. But in the first two games, like, it's not close how much faster and more attacking they look than the LA Kings. Are the Kings that slow or are the Sharks that good?
Well, remember back to when we were, just before the series, we were laughing at each other because we both picked the Sharks. And I said, I'm picking the Sharks for the seventh year in a row. Like, one of these years, I'm not going to pick them, but I'm picking them again. And I think a fatal flaw for LA has been exposed here. During the regular season, you know, they had times when they didn't play quite so well, but they, over the course of 80 games, I mean, they just do it. They make it so hard to score that they don't score a lot, but it's enough, and they win, and they get good goaltending. In this series, it seems like they just can't keep up. If you look at their roster, they've got one guy on each line that's really not very quick. You got Dustin Brown, who's had a dramatic drop off in production. Mike Richards, who I don't even really know what's happened to him, except he can't get to the spots on the ice that he needs to get to anymore. And Justin Williams isn't a quick player. Very smart, but not a very quick player. And then you mix in a couple of defensemen in Regier Mitchell, and they played Matt Green last night. He was -4. They're not a quick team. And San Jose over the last couple of years has made it their number one goal to get faster. And they're more dangerous. They're more balanced. Look at even the role players they added. I hesitate to say them because they're ex-Oilers. It's Torres and Brown. But they're not asking them to carry significant roles. They're asking them to play much smaller roles. Brown even smaller than Torres. And had Raffy not got hurt, he would have had a more significant role. But they both scored last night.
Yep.
They're both physical. They're both fast. And the one thing that's changed in San Jose is they're not big and slow and plodding anymore. And I don't think LA can keep up. But I will say this. 18 of the last 19 games between these two teams, the home team has won. And so it's kind of followed script, and we'll see what LA can do in Game 3. But, man, I don't know. I don't know what I'm more surprised with, that McKinnon's got 7 points or that San Jose scored 13 goals on LA.
Ray, as always, it's great to talk to you, man. We'll talk to you next week. Where are we watching you next?
Tonight I'm in Minnesota, so I'll see McKinnon up close tonight. Looking forward to that. Tomorrow I'm in Detroit for Boston and Detroit. Then I'm going to a Tigers game on Wednesday, and then I'm going to Boston and Detroit again on Thursday.
Nice. Excellent. Oh. Well, maybe we'll even talk a little baseball with you next week.
Oh, well, Saturday I was at Fenway, and there's nothing better than that. So.
Yeah, awesome.
Beautiful day at Fenway. Little Fenway Frank.
Tough gig right now.
Yeah, I was doing research.
Oh, nice. I didn't know you had a beer show, so that's good.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'll tell you, the beers they serve there, I just think it's yellow water, but that's all right. You're at the ballpark. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's American beer. That's why it's garbage.
No, but it didn't even matter. It's at a ballpark.
Yeah, it's true.
You're gonna either pay $35 for a real beer or pay $8.95 for this thing that you can see through.
Yeah.
Well, we had a good day anyway.
I bet you did. Ray, as always, great. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Take care, Jason. See ya.